Thanks for joining us at the Business Growth Cafe, where each week we select from a menu of topics for a focused discussion with an industry expert to provide insights that can impact your business's growth. With your host, Angelo Ponzi.
I am Angelo Ponzi, your host here at the Business Growth Cafe, and thank you for joining us. Today at the cafe, I'm excited to have Don DiCostanzo, CEO and co-founder of Pedego Electric Bikes, here in the studio discuss riding on the road to growth is not necessarily a long and straight one. Don, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have you here. Now, we saw each other in the hallway for the first time maybe in 3 or 4 years, but I want to tell the audience I am a Pedego owner. I have two bikes, my wife and I, and I'm not sure if this story was ever communicated to you, but our very first weekend with the bikes, we took a 47-mile ride. It was crazy. We weren't even thinking about it. Thank God for throttle, because it was all uphill all the way back. And shortly after that, we talked to somebody in your Huntington Beach stores where we got the bikes. They gave me the name of a trailer hitch company, and I went and had a hitch put on the back of my car, bought a rack, and now we just take them down to the beach as opposed to trying to ride down there. That's where we have all our energy when we get there.
Great story.
Yeah, thank you. So before we get started, why don't we just put a little context for the folks that are listening today of who you are and a little bit about Pedego.
Well, I wasn't born here in California, but I got here as fast as I could because it's a great place to live. And one of the things we have the ability to do is enjoy great weather all the time. And one of the pastimes that most of us were growing up as kids is riding a bike. But one of the things that stops us from riding a bike is just what you mentioned, hills. You know, if you took that long ride all the way down, if you had to look forward to that terrible ride back where you had to go uphill or face headwinds, the electric bike does that. So, you know, my pastime as a kid was riding a bike. And as I got older, I lived at the top of a hill. And I loved to ride my bike down to the beach. But I didn't love going back up that hill. So consequently, I didn't ride my bike very often. Once I found out electric bikes, I discovered there was a way you could get back up the hill, still get exercise, and still get the enjoyment of riding a bike with all the negative. And at the end of the day, what an electric bike does is flatten hills. And I ditched my long career in the automotive industry and started in the electric bike business relatively late, 30 years in automotive, and to switch over to bicycle industry was a bit unusual, but it was the best decision I ever made because now I have the opportunity to sell recreational fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of your mantra, hello fun, right?
Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, we have bicycles and they're cool and they're, but the bottom line is people don't buy them because it's a bike. They buy it because they have fun on the bikes. And the experience you related, I hear every day, things you wouldn't have done previously, places you can explore. We've got fabulous bike paths around here. As we get older, we don't have the same stamina and agility and maybe desire to go out and do what we might have done when we were in our teens or in our 20s. But as we get older, we find we can still do these things.
Yeah, that's what I love about the bike. There's always that confidence, at least for me, that I know I can get back, depending on how far I go. And I love, and we won't necessarily get into all the details about the bike, but with paddle assist and all the things that can help move you along, it's a lot of fun. I ask a couple questions of all my guests before we get started. And the first one is, when you think about growing your business, what keeps you up at night?
Well, I'd say there's not a lot that keeps me up at night because I get every day I wake up and I know I'm going to have a different day. But the challenges we have is supply chain. You know, we got hit with tariffs and we have a lot more competition than we've had in the past. And there's a lot of people selling a lot cheaper product without any support behind it. So people will sometime invest in a cheaper bike and then only to find out once it breaks, they don't have any way to fix it. So I make sure that we've got to, you know, I stay awake at night trying to figure out how ways we can better serve our customers. We have two goals at Pedego. Number one is to delight our customer. And that's the most important goal. Mm-hmm. We not satisfy them, because it used to be customer satisfaction was everything. It's not enough anymore today. You have to delight them.
Right.
And the second goal we have is to make our dealers successful, because without our dealers, we can't delight our customers.
Right.
So
go ahead.
So that's what I work. That's what I think about and better ways to do that.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to talk a little bit about your dealer network a little later in the show. The other question I like to ask is, what is the best business advice you've ever gotten and or given?
Well, there's a lot of things, but I would say the best advice that I've gotten and I give out almost on a daily basis is, as an entrepreneur, there are no failures. There are only learning experiences. I'm not so sure where I picked that up. But anytime someone said, I failed or this didn't work, I said, it's a learning experience. And I was with a potential dealer today that's opening up some stores in Houston. And he said he worked at Amazon. And he says, for 4 years at Amazon, they taught me to fail quickly. Okay, and I think that's a good story. You know, you have to try different things, and the world's a different place than it was just a few years ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
And failure should be accepted as a step to success, because as any entrepreneur will tell you, not everything they do is successful.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had a few serial entrepreneurs on the shows the last few weeks, and the gentleman last week had 10 companies, 3 were successful, and 10 failed. And myself, I mean, I've had a couple, been fortunate to have a few successful ones, but I call them dead bodies along the road,
right,
or a lot of road litter, because I've had a few of those. But to your point, that's how we learn and be able to take that, not have fear and have right. focus and always take one step forward. I pulled up a couple stats, and I want to congratulate you and certainly the organization. Pedigo has been ranked in the Inc. 5000 for 5 years in a row. That's fantastic. You have gone from fewer than 30 stores to over 150 worldwide in less than, what, 10 years? 10 years, approximately. And you personally were Orange County Business Journal's 2016 Entrepreneur of the Year. Congratulations. Those are wonderful stats.
Thank you.
Now, to get there, of course, I talked about that bumpy road, lots of ups and downs, twists and turns. So let's talk a little bit about that. You launched Pedigo in 2009.
2008 was actually the year that we formed the company, but okay. we didn't start selling bikes till 2009.
So when you were ready to go rock and roll, did you have a clear vision, or was it, I'll say, typical entrepreneurs, I have got a great idea, we have really a lot of passion for it, and we're gonna march forward and not necessarily have the long-term vision in the road?
The latter, for sure. You know, if you asked me to write a business plan today, I'm not so sure I could. I've written lots of business plans in my career. None of them ever worked. It's the one that I didn't write the business plan turned out to be the best one, because there are a lot of turns in the road, and you have to make the decisions when you get to each fork. But just to give a little bit of context to it, I did own an electric bike store in 2007 that I started, and that's where I learned the business. I call it my lab. And I did the R&D there to figure out. And there I sold electric bicycles. I sold an electric car, the Zen electric car, Z-E-N-N. They're since out of business. And I sold electric golf carts, electric skateboards, electric scooters, and electric bikes. And I figured out in about a month or two that electric bikes are where it was.
Oh, okay.
And that's what it gave the idea to form a company to sell nothing but electric bikes. And it had been tried and failed before with Lee Iacocca. He had raised $50 million to start an electric bike company called EV Global Motors in 1998. And in 2003, they went bankrupt. And they failed for a lot of reasons. But it was important for me to understand why he failed.
Right.
And there were about 5 reasons why he failed. And I understood each one of them. And I went in there with a wise open to make sure I didn't make the same mistakes that he made.
Okay. So not a written plan per se, but you certainly did your homework. And I always encourage the audience and the people that I deal with, you have to understand your customer. You have to understand the competition and look at what's been successful. There's a, I think it's Bon Jovi that said, it says the road is clear in the rearview mirror, right? And it's so true that, you know, but my wife would say, don't look back unless you plan on going there. And so we kind of combine those things, and we're always moving forward.
Well, are you Italian?
I am.
So in Gumball Rally, there's a famous line in there, and the Italians get in the car, and they're ready to race, and I think a Lamborghini or Ferrari, and they rip off the rearview mirror. And the first thing he says, we don't care what's behind us.
I love that. So when you think about when you brought the bikes to market and you looked at the successes and the failures that have been going on currently and prior to you, there were obviously challenges and obstacles. What were some of those, and are they similar to what you face today, or that kind of dynamic has changed?
Well, I'd say that every year we had a different set of challenges, and I look at challenges as a way to prove who's better. You know, if you have an unsatisfied customer, I make it my personal ambition to make sure that I not only turn that customer around, but make him delighted. So there's no no length I won't go to satisfy a customer. That's been true without. Each year you have a different set of circumstances. It might be a quality challenge. It might be a supply problem. It might be a tariff problem. It might be a competitive problem. Every year there's different ones. You just have to, as an entrepreneur, you just have to be prepared to deal with any of them. And I look at them as challenges and opportunities and to prove that we're better. So I think that's important for entrepreneurs to consider. You have to either be first or best. I like to be both. Mm-hmm. In the case of the electric bike world with Pedego, we were, I'm not going to say we're the first electric bike, we're the first ones to develop a brand. And I also think we're the best electric bike company. And that's what I spend every day thinking about, how can we be better? Because there's people chasing you. And once you have a successful idea, you have a lot of competitors.
A lot of competitors. Hence, let's tear the rearview mirror off so we don't know who's behind us.
Exactly.
Now, at one point in time, you expanded internationally as well. Were those similar issues or challenges, or another whole new set?
Well, we never consciously decided to expand internationally. It came organically. The power of the internet, people find you and they hunt you down. And we had a person in Europe that wanted to distribute our product in Europe. And we said, no, we're not. We're making our products for the U.S. We're committed to the U.S. And his insistence, and he'd come over and he said, promise, just give me a day, I'll fly over. And on Thanksgiving Day, I think in 2010 or 2011, a guy came over here from Europe and said, and spent the day with me. And he was willing to give me $150,000 and buy a container of our bikes. And I said, well, that's a no-lose proposition. So he gave me the money. We sold him the bikes. And that set up our European distribution. So now we have bikes in Ireland, England, France, Italy, and Spain, and Germany. And it's not anywhere near successful because it's a different market over there.
Right.
But it's just an extra. Our most successful foreign market's Canada. And while export business comprises less than 10% of our business, at least we have a stake in the ground in those markets. Mm-hmm. And we'll, as time goes, we'll eventually expand. But our goal was to be successful first in Orange County. And we have 6 stores in Orange County. And then expand that. And then we went to San Diego and then up north. And California, Pedego is fairly well established. We've still got the rest of the country to do. And this is still the best country in the world to do business.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are so many opportunities with 150 stores, whatever the number of here in the U.S., that's, you've barely scratched the surface.
We think the goal is about 500. And people say, how do you know that? I said, because that's about how many Whole Foods has.
Okay.
And that's our very sophisticated marketing. Somebody asked me today how many stores we're going to have in Houston. And I looked up and Whole Foods has 6 locations in Houston. We'll have 6 Pedegos in Houston.
You made a comment that your goal is, if there's an issue with a customer, it's always, how do you delight them? But you use the word I. Do you physically get on the phone and talk to your customers?
Well, when it gets to me, I do.
Okay.
But when it comes to me, it's a problem.
Okay.
Because somebody in my organization failed. And I probably get 2 or 3 calls a year.
Okay.
That end up floating to my level. It might be a random one. It might be that nobody else was able to do it. But because I have the right people, they already know. And their question is, what would Don do? And I teach them that. And it's to do whatever it takes to delight that customer. I don't care what it takes. I don't care what it costs. The cost is irrelevant if it's not logical. I always say you can't have a logical solution to an illogical person.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes some of our customers are illogical and their thinking's illogical. But that doesn't stop me from wanting to delight them.
Absolutely. And really, that's the culture of the organization. I mean, that's really top down. And I'm a firm believer. Culture is not built bottom up. It's top down to make sure everybody's on the same page. And I know we're going to talk about branding, but and I know you've got a marketing degree and certainly a CEO believes in branding. Woohoo! I love it. You know, it's really important that the message and the way you communicate is carried out not only within your organization, but the challenge, of course, is how do you carry that out into 150 dealers? So what are some of the tactics and strategies in a dealer network that you use to make sure that the brand is always customer-facing?
So the first and most important thing we do, we are the dealer's back office. Anything he needs from us, graphic design, help with Google AdWords, social media, we have the resources to provide him that.
Okay.
So we give that dealer everything that he needs to be successful, all the tools he needs. Because I have a marketing degree and I came from a sales world, I believe it's the marketing department's job is to give the sales department every tool they need to be successful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if I were going to go out and build a house and I was going to build it out of lumber, I'd make sure I had a very good air gun. I wouldn't be doing it with a hammer and nails, right? You'd get a gun and a good compressor to shoot. I think marketing's the same way. You've got to have the right tools in order for them to be successful. The other thing that is probably our most powerful tool is every year we have a dealer meeting with all of our dealers. We host them here in California. We've had them in Orange County for the most part. We've had one in Palm Springs. But they come together, and I like to call it, it's the best 2 days of my life, because everybody, all the dealers come together. They're friends. They revisit from the last time they were there. They exchange ideas. They may swap lies. They do a lot of things that build a camaraderie, and that carries them all throughout the year. And then we follow that up now with weekly conversations with them on the phone on Tuesday mornings at 9 o'clock. We get on the phone. We do essentially a podcast with them to explain what's going on, what's new, what's working and what's not working, and introduce new tools to them.
Okay. Do you have a dealer community where the dealers actually communicate with each other?
We do. We have a Facebook page where they have their own channel, if we will. We don't intercede in it, but we monitor it and see if there's things that we need to be aware of that we find out. Sometime we find out what's going on that. And so it's just another tool that we have thanks to the internet.
Right. I tell clients, I said, your simplest and easiest and least expensive way to learn something is listen to your customer service department. Because if you've got consistency, then you've got a problem and you should be dealing with it and not just leave it up to the individuals, but capture that information and utilize that information to ensure that, you know, to your point, you're delighting your customer.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So you have dealers. Now, the first reaction would be franchising. But that's not the route you took. You took licensing. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, that's a significant strategic decision we made. And every day I live with that, and I'm glad I did and made the right decision. We decided at one point we wanted to franchise the business. We had 5 or 10 stores, and we went to a company in Chicago called iFranchise Group. And for about $125,000, they will consult with you, advise you, give you the tools you need to go franchise. So I approached them, and we had about 10 stores. They said, come back when you have 20 or 30. You don't have quite enough. So I called them back, and we had 50. And they said, where have you been? I said, I don't know. It just kind of got away from me. And we looked at the possibility of franchising and went through the whole process. And the CEO of the company told me, you know, only 95% of the companies that take this next step actually franchise. 5% decide not to franchise. And I said, well, why would they spend all this money and all this time and do it? Well, I found out, because we ended up being one of the 5%, Yeah. And the main reason we did it is we felt it created an adversarial relationship with our dealers. And my business partner came to me and said, we can't do this. In the middle of training, by the way, we've already spent $125,000. We're into now filing our franchise disclosure documents. He said, did you hear what they said? We have to have all these rules. He said, you don't like rules. He says, we're going to have to fire you. So at the end of the day, I said, you're right. And so we made the decision then to go from to become, we talked to our attorney. He said, well, the other option you have is to be a licensee. So in essence, what we do is we license our name in exchange for exclusivity. So if you're a Pedego store and you can only sell Pedegos, you can't sell another brand. If you choose to sell another brand, you're no longer a Pedego store. So our name goes up and we give them all the support. If they choose not to be a Pedego store, then they can go out and sell other brands, but they're not going to sell Pedego.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And you're right. That is a strategic decision. I've been fortunate. I worked with a lot of different restaurant chains that franchise, and that's another whole podcast to talk about some of the issues and problems of franchising. But you still have to make a decision on who gets the license. And I found an interesting in one of the articles I was reading about you, or maybe it was just on franchising. I think it was like franchising versus licensing, and it said that 50 people over 50 have a higher degree of success than people kind of under 50. And also, when I looked at your model, you tend to look at folks that are 50 plus, maybe in retirement, their second career versus 20s and 30s and things like that. So explain why kind of that older demographic makes more sense for you from a licensing standpoint.
Well, I can tell you, we do have some younger licensees now that are doing a very good job, but 80% of our people are over 50. And there's a couple things that come into play here. Number one is the thing, the I think I'm most proud of the accomplishment of making a lot of people entrepreneurs. Being an entrepreneur, I take a lot of pride in making other people entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. And many of our store owners have never been in business for themselves. They work for corporate work, and they don't even know so much as they have to file for an LLC and the different steps they do. So we handhold them through the whole process. Some don't need it. Some are great experience, and they do it all by themselves. But most of them need to help us help them pick out a location, help them negotiate the lease, go through all the steps, get an accounting system installed, help them with everything along the way. So that's a big part of it. And we find the people a little more mature that have been around business a little bit understand the value of that more so than anything. But more importantly, our demographic is over 50. So somebody who's 60 or 70 relates better to somebody who's 60 or 70 than somebody that's 20 or 30. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem the bike industry's having. Most of the people who work in a bike shop are much younger, and they don't get the electric bike because they've got all the stamina and the strength to go out and ride a regular bike. They somehow think we're cheating, but they don't realize someday they're going to get older and they're going to enjoy the fact that having a little bit of motor help you up the hill is a good thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You said something that reminded me as my wife and I were riding one day, and these younger guys on 10 speeds, whatever, came zipping by us, and one of them yelled, "Cheater!"
And I always wonder who we're cheating. Are we cheating them? Yeah. I mean, I just say, when you're cheating, you got to be cheating somebody who you're cheating.
Yeah, and I'm yelling back, "I'm pedaling!" In the restaurant business, we'd say, you know, we need to put butts in the seats. In your case, we need to put butts on the seats.
Correct.
So what are some of the marketing challenges and things that you do to help drive customers to the stores?
Well, that's a great question. We spend a lot of money not to get customers to buy a Pedego, but to get customers to try a Pedego. We don't want them to buy one. In fact, we advise them not to buy an electric bike. People say, "Should I buy an electric bike?" I say, absolutely not. Don't buy one. Go rent one first and decide it's for you. Mm-hmm. And we find, by and large, most of our customers start out by going into a store, renting a bike, and then saying, "Wow, these are great. I'd like to buy one." And even more important than that, that's how we've gotten about 90% of our dealers. The dealer that was in this morning that's going to be opening in Houston, they test rode them at our store in Scottsdale. In fact, they got there at 10 o'clock in the morning because the store opened at 10, and they walked in and said, I think we're out of bikes. But they found two bikes for them to rent, and they rented all that day, and they loved it. And they said the only reason they went home is because the sun was going down. And they went back and then decided that this was a business that they wanted to be in. So, you know, we do want to get butts on the seats. We want to get people to try them. And we have 100 and some odd locations. They all rent them. You can go in there and try one. If you just want to try it for a few minutes, that's free. If you want to ride it for a few hours, which I recommend you do, there's a small charge for that. But it gives you the experience to say, wow, this is for me, or no, this is the dumbest thing in the world. And I got that experience because I rented a Chrysler 300 15 years ago when I flew into, interestingly enough, Scottsdale. And I drove that car around town for 3 or 4 days, and I loved it. And I never thought, went home and bought a Chrysler 300. 3 years later, I bought another Chrysler 300. And then about a year later, my dad needed a new car, and I recommended a Chrysler 300. So that one rental experience turned into me spending $100,000 on a Chrysler 300, which I never would have done had I not rented one.
Yeah, absolutely. And your description of how you get customers is exactly what happened to us. We went down, we rented them for a day, and just came back and said, okay, we're getting some.
Right.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, I would have...
Electric bike, you would have scoffed at. Who wants one of those things?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm getting flashed over here. Believe it or not, we got about 3 minutes left. Man, we needed like 3 hours. In a minute... You now have some celebrities, William Shatner, which I'm a fan, Martha Stewart, Snoop Dogg, you know, so you're starting to get some celebrity endorsements, but Shatner was a customer.
Well, all of our 100% of our celebrity endorsements have come organically. They started as customers. Shatner started as a customer. Bill and I have become good friends since then, and he's introduced me to obviously other celebrities. Martha Stewart became a customer organically into our store in Bar Harbor, Maine, and we since connected the two of them together, and we're going to be on one of their shows coming up. Bill's going to be on Martha and Snoop's Potluck Kitchen coming up in June, and on that show there'll be a surprise reveal there, and it has to do with Pedego. That's all I can say. So,
all right.
The celebrity thing has been awesome because they're authentic. Bill got them for all his whole family has Pedegos. He's done commercials for us. He's totally authentic. We don't have any celebrities unless they're authentic, unless they're really in love with the brand.
Okay, fantastic. So I think this is probably my last question. Thinking about business growth and the people listening, what are two recommendations or tips you can give to entrepreneurs as they're starting off or on the road to growth, if you will?
Well, the number one thing is I'd say don't go into something you're not experienced and have some knowledge about. Before I opened Pedego, I opened a bike shop as a hobby or a shop to sell stuff. Mm-hmm. That's where I learned it. I don't think I could have started Pedego without that retail experience. So whenever a customer, I have to deal with a customer or a dealer, I understand exactly what position they're, 'cause I started as a customer, then I became a dealer, and now we're a brand. So that's probably the single most important. Be experienced. Understand. Don't go into thing blindly, because the things you don't know about are going to kill you. The other thing is that you got to be passionate about it. You better love what you do. I liked what I did when I worked in my former careers. I really liked what I did. I never loved what I do. Now that I love what I do, it's not work anymore. I haven't worked since I started Pedego. Every day is just a joy, and it feels like I'm working in my hobby. And to me, if you can achieve that, that's magical.
Yeah, fantastic. That's what we all want to achieve. So, thank you so much. Why don't you tell the audience about how they can find out more about Pedego and about you?
Well, it's pretty simple. You can go to pedego.com. That's P-E-D-E-G-O. And there you can locate a dealer near you. And I suggest you go in there and look at the bikes. And if you're so inclined to try one and rent one out. And if you tell them Don sent you, they'll give you an hour free rental. So
there you go.
Bill Shatner would tell you the same thing. Send them in the store. Use his name or my name. And they'll give you 1 hour free rental so you can try them out.
All right. I love that. And I also want to give you're going to be on June 13th, the Executive Next Practices. I think it's a workshop called the 2019 Growth Summit. Innovation to drive enterprise growth over at the UCI Cove. So I encourage you listeners to come see Don, and as well as a myriad of other business professionals that day. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here, and thank you for joining us at the cafe. You can find out more about me, read my blogs, or view my show videos at theponzagroup.com, or connect with me on LinkedIn. And if you're in the business, needs a CMO, but you're not ready to hire a full-time person yet, connect with me. I'd love to talk to you about the idea of fractional chief marketing officers. And you can subscribe to the show at thebusinessgrowthcafe.com, or we are on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. And believe it or not, lots of platforms around the world. Join me next week for lunch at the Business Growth Cafe.
Thank you for listening to today's discussion at the Business Growth Cafe with your host, Angelo Ponzi. Take a moment to subscribe to this podcast and visit our website at www.businessgrowthcafe.com. Read Angelo Ponzi's blogs at www.theponzigroup.com.